Movie BS with Aaron Snyder.
Jeff and Eric were walking through the woods one night. That's right. When they saw something giving off an eerie light, so bright. Turned out it was an alien meteorite. That's right. And its radiation gave them superhuman insight. So bright.
And on that day, they vowed to use their powers for good instead of evil, swearing to protect mankind from the vile clutches of their evil arch-nemesis, Bad Cinema. And if you find yourself in a bind at the multiplex, not sure what to watch, you too can call on
Movie BS with Aaron Snyder.
Hello, welcome to Movie BS with Aaron Snyder, the internet's only movie podcast. I'm your host, Eric D. Snyder, there with my co-host, Jeff Baer.
Hi, I'm Jeff Baer. That was my co-host, Eric D. Snyder. Here we go.
You know what we have today? An iTunes review.
Nice. You asked for one. You received one.
That's right.
I would like a very frosty beverage.
Oh, I see what you're doing. I don't think it works that way.
Oh.
Here's the review that someone wrote for us on iTunes.
As you all know, it's coming to you in Eric's old-time radio voice.
Muckdart says, easy enough to hide in your purse and bring out when the air conditioning is not working well. Great for when you are outdoors attending functions in the summer heat and need a blast of cool air discreetly. I believe that may actually be a review for some sort of portable fan, but it was posted as a review of our podcast. So I'm going to assume he pulls us out to keep cool in the summertime.
I was trying to figure out, like, I was like, is that a saying that I'm not familiar with?
Yeah, no.
Like, if something's really hip, it's like a fan that you pull out to cool down?
I mean, I guess it may, if we're cool.
What if
the show's cool.
You don't know what kids are saying.
That's true. I really don't. Of course, we also don't know if that was a kid that wrote that. Might be one of our kind, a grown-up.
Mm.
Anyway, thanks for the review, Muckdart.
Maybe somebody would be nice enough to give us a real review.
Whatever. I'm
not
just picky.
Saying maybe.
It was a positive review.
Oh, you would have been upset if it had been a one star. That would have riled you up.
Let's talk about movies that are opening that people can watch in their movie theaters.
Let's put a serious focus on one particular movie.
Let's shine a bright one.
So
here's the movie called Focus. Nope. Spotlight.
Interesting fact. Mm-hmm. That's the longest movie that we'll be talking about for this show.
Is it the longest one?
It's technically the longest.
You're right.
Beat the 33 by a single minute.
Mm.
Just over 2 hours. Spotlight is rated R because we don't want to have kids sit through something that could be viewed as educational or important
On
any level.
Well, they do say the F word one time, and they also talk about how some kids got molested.
Yeah.
Was also, you know, in the newspapers and on the TV news and other places that aren't rated R. Whatever. You do you, ratings board.
1976, Boston. Something ain't right. 2001, Boston Globe. looks into what exactly is going on here with this Catholic Church and the child molestations that are happening?
By the priests. July 2001. Boston Globe gets a new editor, and that's Liv Schreiber. He's out of town.
He's playing a character. Marty.
Marty Baron. My mistake.
Yeah.
And he's from out of town, and he's also not Catholic, unlike most of Boston. And so he's got this outsider perspective.
Not only is he not Catholic and not Boston, he's also Jewish.
Oh yes, yeah, he's Jewish.
You know, you can. I love that. There's never a focus about it, but there's
a spotlight,
just this,
if you will.
Yes. But there's this thing where you'll just notice a couple of characters kind of bristle mm-hmm. about him. And you can just feel in the back of your mind why they might be doing it.
He's an outsider in several ways. And he notices a few things with some previous cases that were sort of one and done and then no deeper investigation with the priests. And he says they got this team called the Spotlight Team.
Gosh, I love this Spotlight Team.
Man, wouldn't you love to work on a Spotlight Team?
Oh, would I ever?
And actually,
it sounds like a lot of work.
It does, actually, and
a little busy.
The Spotlight Team, what they do is they work separately from the rest of the newsroom, and they will choose a particular subject or issue and work in depth for months and months.
It's the deep dive of investigative journalism.
And so the new guy, Liv Schreiber, says, hey, why don't you look at the priests diddling the kids?
Well, because, you know, we're a little busy. We got our own things going on.
Not sure there's a story there. We're working on this other story.
And then Marty says, oh, yeah, why don't you do that, though, anyway? And they say, okay, boss.
You're the boss. And so who we have? We have Mark Ruffalo. We got Rachel McAdams.
Yes.
Mark Ruffalo, by the way, Mike. He's a lapsed Catholic, kind of bitter lapsed Catholic. Rachel McAdams, Sasha.
Her family's still tight with the church.
Goes to Mass with Grandma, yeah.
Yep.
And then who else do we have? Their boss, their sort of supervisor of the Spotlight Team.
Robbie, Michael Keaton.
And then there's a fourth guy who's not famous.
Isn't it Brian Darcy James. He plays Matt, and goodness, it's nice to have somebody that's not super famous in this, because I feel like it not only does everybody do a great job of creating a character here, but he kind of grounds it in the sense of, this is a group. This is a team.
Yeah. I feel bad for him because Mark Ruffalo, Rachel McAdams, Michael Keaton, and a fourth guy.
You know what I don't feel bad about him though? He gets his moments.
Oh, yeah.
He really truly does. And that's one of the things about this. I guess Mark Ruffalo's the lead, but that doesn't mean he's got all the juice, you know?
No, he has some of the juice. But the juice is evenly distributed.
He's got a touch more juice. But even the likes of, what's his name?
John Slattery?
Billy Crudup. He's got his moments here.
He's another lawyer.
And Stanley Tucci, of course. Stanley Tucci's probably the showiest of these roles. But anyway, the team starts to investigate.
Basically, there's a specific case from 3 years earlier, Father Gagan, and didn't get much coverage. But they're starting there, and they want to get into did the St. Louis Cardinals, did they know about it?
What about the Cubs? Were they in?
No, Cardinal Law. Did he know? And then they start as a journalist, or as someone who used to be a journalist anyway. This gets my journalism juices flowing with the 100%. Research, pulling out books, and looking
clues?
At old records, clues. Yeah,
tips. You got tips. You got on the record and off the record.
You got
it all here.
You got books. I guess the Catholic Church puts out a book, probably a big seller every year, that lists where all the priests are. And they start to suspect the Spotlight Team that, hey, maybe they've been just sort of moving the priests around when there's trouble. Mm-hmm. So they start looking for priests that were marked like out of action or whatever the term was they used in the book. And they start following that around.
Right. There's – and everybody has their own individual that they're following up with or story that they're trying to crack on the Spotlight Team.
Some of them are talking to some of the victims or trying
right,
to.
But then you get some collaboration on occasion too. So it's kind of like they're all kind of like going out, coming back, reworking. What do we got? And you got the editors saying like, we need more. That's not right. Let's focus on something else.
Right.
Why does this matter? All of them having slightly different roles. And it's that simple thing of it doesn't feel like you're cookie cutter based on a true story.
No.
And it feels, as somebody who's, been in newsrooms just like you, doesn't it feel like it's got that vibe?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
My goodness.
You got John Slattery as Ben Bradley Jr., who – Ben Bradley is the son of the guy who was the editor of the Washington Post during Watergate, All the President's Men. So he's like a journalism legacy. And then you've got an advocate for some of the victims saying that he sent a bunch of evidence and documentation over to the Globe a few years ago and what happened to it. You got people, of course, trying to hush things up. You got the church not cooperating. You got lawyers technically being unbiased, but really in the church's pocket.
Yeah. And you don't have the Boston Globe coming out of this looking perfectly squeaky clean. And
that's
a really nice aspect because in creating this film, like they had to go above and beyond to kind of investigate the whole story.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some lovely Mike Ryan has a tremendous interview and focus where he talked to Josh Singer, one of the screenwriters. And it's really cool how they attacked this film to really put it together.
Yeah.
So after you see it, you can read up on Mike Ryan's interview. It was great.
Yeah, that was over on uprocks.com.
Yeah. And also, this Tom McCarthy. I mean, am I right?
Yeah.
Like, this guy.
He directed it and co-wrote it.
Yeah, he's finally going to I think this movie is going to make him hop up a level. Like, it should have been Win-Win, which I thought was incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And even Station Agent is great.
Came out of the gate with that. And The Visitor was very good. He also made The Cobbler, a terrible Adam Sandler movie earlier this year.
No, he didn't.
This might be the case of a director making one of the best and one of the worst movies in the same year.
Hang on.
Hmm.
This is the case. He's won.
We can't think of another example immediately. You're right. He must be the one.
Bare logic.
We thought about it for about a second and a half. So yeah, this must be it.
There it is. He really directed that? It's not like there's two guys with the same name kind of thing?
Nope, it was him. In fact, somebody interviewed him. Somebody else we know interviewed him and asked about that. And he's got no regrets about The Cobbler. He said he has affection for it. But yeah. His directorial style here is that he's not showy or flashy. Nothing really draws attention to itself as far as the way it's directed. But if you step back and look at it, you can see that that's a skill in itself. To tell this very complicated story with lots of characters and lots of moving parts,
mm-hmm.
to tell it in a way that is suspenseful and interesting and there's mystery to it, even if we know what some of the outcomes are.
Right.
And that's a crucial skill in and of itself right there. I'll notice that often in the film, characters are literally in the shadow of a church. There are churches everywhere, and often they're looming over them. The way that the church, like there's a scene where the cardinal, the new guy, Liv Schreiber, meets with the cardinal, he gives him a book, says it's a guide to the city of Boston, and it's a catechism book. There's your guide to the city of Boston.
Yeah.
Which, as someone who lived for several years in Utah and worked in a newspaper there, I recognize a lot of that, the way that the main majority population sometimes reacts to insiders. We had a new editor who was not Mormon and not from the area, and people were kind of weird about it sometimes. Not super weird, but it was definitely, he's not one of us. He doesn't know this community.
Yeah. No, and that's it does make Boston feel small. Not necessarily in a good way or bad way, but small in the sense of, like, we're all the same.
Right.
And we are going to protect our own.
Yeah.
Even when it's not the best idea.
And even when individuals are not really fans of the church anymore or practicing, they still kind of instinctively want to protect the church. And, mm-hmm. Another factor that makes it kind of exciting and makes the story work is the fact that the Globe is working all of this somewhat secretly. They don't want to tip their hand to the other paper, the Herald, to scoop them on the story. But they also mm-hmm. don't want to sit on news forever. And so it's a very delicate balance of how long can we wait? And the bosses keep saying, no, we want to go after the system, not individual priests. So we have to get
Mike,
deeper and deeper.
Mark Ruffalo's character Mike has an amazing moment kind of involving that, where he's finally kind of emotionally exhausted with this idea and has a bit of an outburst. And that would be – like that's one of those things where you're like, that's that's the clip that is going to be shown when you talk about Ruffalo's performance or just this film in general, because I think it really hits it quite well in a way that what was it?
Truth.
Is that the one that was Topher Grace in there?
Yeah, a couple weeks
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's that.
The lesser journalism movie this month.
Yes, I was accepting of Topher Grace's moment until I saw Mark Ruffalo do it so much better. I was accepting. You did not care for
I know,
it.
Except that we saw Spotlight before we saw Truth.
Did we?
Yeah. That's part of the reason Truth, I think, didn't play as well for me.
Because
having already
wow.
seen Spotlight, I was like, eh.
Truth feels forever ago for me.
Yeah.
I was like, what was that one movie with Topher Grace? I couldn't even remember the title.
See? Yeah, Spotlight was four movies before Truth, according to my notebook.
We saw Spotlight a long time ago.
Yeah, we did.
Wow.
But it sticks with us because it's
good. Oh, totally.
It really is a terrific movie. I can't think of very many movies this year that I think are better. And it's really good and good procedure of how journalism works. And I wouldn't bring the whole family, but teenagers, 13 and up, totally.
Oh, of course.
Totally good
of course.
for the teens and the adults.
Yeah.
I give it an A-.
I give it a 9 out of 10.
It's BS approved.
Yes.
All right. So we got the good one out of the way. Let's talk about the rest of them.
Oh, boy.
The 33, another based on a true story. You know what Spotlight didn't do? Spotlight didn't end with footage of the actual people that the movie is about. That's just one of many ways that I like it.
First time in a long time.
Yeah. The 33, you remember those Chilean miners?
Yes.
They fell down that hole.
Right.
And
that what this was about?
Mm-hmm. You were there. Mm-hmm. I saw you there. And
yep.
2010, 33 Chilean miners down in the hole for like 60 some odd days. And then they got them back out.
Mm-hmm.
Miraculous.
Yeah. And it starts, quickly showing us a few of the ones that they will focus a little bit more on. Because they don't have time to let us in on 33 individuals' lives.
No. Not until the very end when they show each of the 33 individually in real life. And right off the bat, when they show us these little vignettes of various people, here's Juliette Binoche being Chilean and giving her brother an empanada, who's asleep on a bench.
Uh-huh.
That and Antonio Banderas and his family. Somebody else
is pregnant. And
yeah.
Somebody else has a mistress.
So all those things made me think, uh-oh. I'm not finding any of these characters or their vignettes very interesting or compelling. Is this what we're in for?
Yep.
And it is.
And not only that, probably the worst. And this is a guy I guess I'm rooting for because of my affection for La Bamba for so many years ago.
LDP.
Lou Diamond Phillips, he's a guy who's he's the boss. But he's not the big boss.
No.
So he's talking to his big boss, and he's like, I don't feel like this mine is safe. It might not be safe enough. Look, there's troubles. Mm-hmm. We shouldn't go down there.
And as he says twice in the movie, it's my job to keep these men safe.
Right.
But the bigger boss is like, no, we don't have time to stop and fix a thing or whatever.
Quit your dilly-dallying.
Mm-hmm. Or however they say it in Spanish.
Go get your copper and gold and get it up here. So anyway, then they're all down there. And after the rough start, I will say, oh, it was good. It's caved in quicker than I thought.
Yeah,
and
we got right to it.
Yeah, the cave itself.
You like a mine that collapses quickly.
Yes. That was visually interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And then, well, we're just hanging out in the mine.
Oh, man. I remember because I remember the story and the reason it was so miraculous is that all 33 of them survived and they all made it out.
Right.
And I don't know that the movie necessarily foreshadows that they're all going to live, but you kind of, it's called the 33. You kind of feel like, even if you don't know if you don't remember the news story, you kind of know. And so there's no suspense over what's going to happen to any of the guys. Like, there's never any, oh, is this guy injured? Is he sick? Is anybody going to die? No,
oh, there's an old guy. Uh-oh.
Yeah, he'll be fine.
Yeah. And not only that, it's fairly tensionless with these guys down there. Sure, there's a couple of moments of like, I'm thinking I might kill myself because I'm in a mine.
And up topside, somebody even says, we got men down there with depression and bipolar and alcoholism, and they're going to kill each other. And I was like, yeah, show us some of that. Like, yeah, show us the tensions. Show us what it must have been.
After that, yes, one of them has a knife for just a little bit, but it's not for the like any of the reasons that they just talked about. It's a rough sit through. Antonio Banderas is actually pretty engaging, but I felt like he's the only one.
I feel like he's only engaging because of his natural Antonio Banderas charisma. Oh, I don't feel like the character is interesting 100%. At all. He does, and he says, because what has happened is with the mine collapse is a huge rock twice the weight of the Empire State Building has collapsed. And their computer model shows them, the people up top, shows them the rock, and then it helpfully shows two little computer drawings of the Empire State Building to get a feel for what that must mean. But the one Antonio Banderas, what he says is, that's not a rock. It's the heart of the mountain. She finally broke.
She's the heart of the mountain. Doesn't he say that?
No, he says, it's the heart of the mountain. She finally broke.
Yeah. Oh, poor mountain.
Don't worry. There's plenty of bad dialogue like that.
It was too late in the game, but there was one fantasy sequence of the guys.
I thought that was touching.
I thought that was good, and it showed that the movie could have been capable of more. Mm-hmm. And then what I kind of found most interesting, which the movie just glosses over because it feels like it's almost already done telling the story, is once contact is made, these guys got to sit down there forever.
Yeah.
And to me, the idea of, you know, talking about the real world while you're stuck in a mine – that's fascinating. Like, life is going on.
Right.
Decisions have to be made about your future.
Right.
And you're stuck there in the mine still for weeks.
Yeah.
And again, the movie wasn't interested in talking about that as much. And in fact, the most engaging part of the film was news footage that was just like real news footage from CNN and whatnot. And that's always my least favorite part of like based on true stories or just anything when it's like, oh, now we're going to go to Fox News or CNN. It's like, don't engage that way. But yeah, it's a rough sit through.
When I realized, oh, they're still going to be stuck down there for weeks. And I was like, we're stuck with them.
Yeah.
And so the movie is mostly, it's not really, it doesn't have time to get into to really devote attention to any of the little mini dramas with any of the characters. Juliette Binoche is up top and her brother's down below. And that
Juliette Binoche is annoying. She's annoying. She
in
is.
In general or in this movie?
In this movie.
All right. So it's mostly focused just on the rescue, but even that isn't really explained because they're drilling down. And then they miss, and then their big revelation, their big epiphany is like, oh, we just need to aim to miss. And I was like, and I wanted, what do you mean? Explain, what are you doing? What are you trying now?
Right.
And so what is ostensibly kind of their main focus of, you know, giving the procedural of how this all worked, that doesn't work either.
Agreed.
And when it was done, I was like, yep, that's what happened. That's the story. Sure enough. To see.
4 out of 10.
And then another true story.
Oh, it is the week of the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And two of these are very weak. Oh, that's nice. My All-American. He's not your All-American. He's my All-American.
This right out of the gate.
Oh, my gosh.
The beginning of this movie.
Oh, my gosh.
It's the present day, more or less, at University of Texas, and a really bad actress playing a student reporter or something.
Oh, she was terrible.
Terrible. I was like, yeah. Like, basic line delivery, awful.
Yes.
And she's, like, the first speaking role in the movie. And she goes, she's interviewing Aaron Eckhart in hilarious old age makeup
mm-hmm.
in his office. remember the first, like her, she says, hey, I want to ask you about your coaching career. And he goes, was I a coach? You know, joking around. And she goes, why, yes, you were. Why, yes, are her actual words. And I thought, all right, we're in for it now. And and then she says, of all the you coached like 30 All-Americans, who was your favorite? And he says, Freddie Steinmark. And she goes, I'm sorry, sir, Freddie Steinmark wasn't an All-American. And he says he wasn't, but he was my All-American.
And then we flash back. And this is the weirdest part of a movie.
I look forward to hearing what this is.
Full of weird parts.
Yeah.
I believe we start in 1960 when he's really young, before high school.
Right.
He's really good at football.
Yep.
And then we go to 66, and he's really good at football.
Yeah.
The movie tells us he's got to try really hard because he's small.
Right.
But in every situation, he's really good at football, and people know that he's really good at football.
Mm-hmm. Breaking school records and stuff.
Nobody doubts his skills, and football, there's tons of small people in football. He wasn't Rudy small.
No.
He was just small. Than the other smallish, really tall guys. Like, it was so weird that they tell us all of this stuff before showing us any sort of struggle. In fact, there's no struggle.
There's no conflicts in this movie.
Why in the world we were watching this movie, except for my reason, which was, hey, this guy wrote Hoosiers, this guy wrote Rudy, I'm going to see this movie instead of the other choice because Hoosiers and Rudy are great. Mm-hmm. For slightly different reasons. Hoosiers is just fantastic, period. Rudy makes me cry every time at the end. I'm in, buddy. Give me another sports movie. I will go on a ride with you.
Yeah, so this kid, this Freddie Steinmark, as a teenager and adult, is played by Finn Wittrock. Finn Wittrock! Who sounds like he should be a pop star on the Flintstones.
Mmm.
And he's a really good player. And then his dad, like, really makes him work really hard. And I thought, oh, does his dad maybe push him too hard or trying to live out his dreams with the kid? No, just wants him to be his best. Just a loving dad.
At whatever he wants.
Yeah.
Doesn't even matter if it's football. Football gives him a good chance. But, like, you know, whatever he wants to be good at.
Goes to visit UT. Is he going to get in? Oh, yep, full ride scholarship. And he meets a girl in high school. And, oh, she's going to go to college with him. No problems there. She doesn't get pregnant. He doesn't cheat on her. There's no problems. Finally, halfway into the movie.
Oh, stop it. It was 2/3 in, wasn't it?
No,
I think it was 2/3.
No, because I looked.
You did? Okay. Yeah, I actually thought it was 2/3.
It was actually 52 minutes. So actually even not quite half. 52 minutes. He's like, oh, my leg hurts. I lean over to you and I whispered, finally.
Oh, it is very obvious when he talks about, I got this bruise playing softball. And the darndest thing, it just won't go away.
Yeah. And then you're like, finally, the reason we're watching this.
Here we go. This movie's bad enough. We're talking about all aspects of it. So then, of course, he plays and he plays and he plays with this injury.
He didn't want to take time off.
And nobody stops him.
No.
His girlfriend's like, you really should. Hey, I really want you to. Will you do it next time? Please check. So that's going on. Coach is like, huh, looks a step slow. All right, get out there. Keep giving me your everything. And he's good. He's recognized as being very good on the team. He is the heart of the defense.
He's a flawless human being.
He really
Everybody loves him.
Flawless human being.
Doesn't do anything wrong, ever.
And not only that, Texas is having a historically great season, and he's a big part of it. And so are these other characters that you're just like, do I care about this quarterback situation at all?
No.
Because the whole time you're just like, all right, so wait, this is a story about UT or this is a story about Freddie? What's going on? And then finally, of course, you know, the injury and blah, blah, blah. Turns out eventually, the kid's got bone cancer.
Yeah.
And this is the problem that I have. I am now a very realistic football fan,
mm-hmm.
in the sense of head injuries make me really queasy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like seeing them anymore. And
so there was a time when you enjoyed seeing head injuries.
There was a time when the NFL, like ESPN, would probably do it every week where it was just like, here's the biggest hits. And like half of them are, would now be considered illegal.
Right.
And yeah, like that was like a draw. Like there was segments based on it. And there was a lot of helmet contact in here where I was like, this is not good. You should not do this to a football movie, even if it might have been happening back then, unless it's a focus, because it makes me uneasy. And then the coach proved to be an idiot at one of these really important games by doing two outrageously dumb decisions for football that magically worked out for him.
Yeah.
And that drove me nuts as
I suspect that's how those games really went down, though.
You don't go for a 2-point conversion.
Well, I know, but if he did.
Just like, oh,
I suspect that's really how it happened.
Maybe. Maybe it was. But anyway, the culture of football is what is at. Is the problem here, because he is like, the coach is complicit. Mm-hmm. At one point, the coach is like, maybe I shouldn't have had you playing so long. And it's like, yeah, that's right. Like, you are part of the problem here, coach. But the movie doesn't ever focus on anything else like that. It's just like, look at him giving it his all. Look at all of that heart that he has, and everybody appreciates it.
Boy has never backed down against nothing or nobody, and he's not going to now. That's what Aaron Eckhart says.
Oh my gosh, just so painful. Oh, but let's not forget, there's also Vietnam very quickly mentioned.
Sure.
There's also the moonwalk very quickly. Like, it's literally like, they at one point, they're just hanging out, and they're like, I can't believe somebody landed on the moon. And there's a newspaper right next to him where it's like, moon landing.
Yeah. It's like, oh, boy, it sure is July 1969 right now.
just terrible.
And also, like the 33, I think this is a very well-meaning movie and sincere, not made to exploit anything, made out of probably a sincere desire to tell this story that someone found very inspiring.
Uh-huh.
And, but yeah, it's just crap. Well-meaning crap, but just crap.
Totally terrible. Like, it felt like you would stumble upon this movie on the Hallmark Channel and just be like, oh, no, I won't put up with this.
They wouldn't show it on Hallmark because it's not about women, though. But on whatever channel.
Oh, and wait, there was also... The movie really wanted you to understand that he was Catholic.
They mentioned he goes to mass every day.
But like every 20 minutes, there's a mention, to the point where I was like, oh, maybe this is going to come into play later in like in a really sincere, deep, meaningful way. And maybe this is a religious movie. And we're going to find out at the end that that's really the focus of this film is how faith can really put you through a difficult time like, you know, bone cancer.
Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah, I think they walk a line there, because if they overdo it, then it turns off the audience that doesn't want to see a religious movie. So it's kind of like they, since that was true of the real guy, they make it part of his character, but then they don't ever do anything with it.
Right.
But yeah.
It's terrible.
I give it a C-.
I was going to say 3. I'm going to stick to my 3.
All right.
But in talking about it, it's like, oh, it's clearly a 2. But I'm going to keep it a 3, because that's what I originally felt like before I spoke of this terrible thing. Aaron Eckhart, it was nice to see him for a little while.
Yeah.
In this film. Oh, man. It's like somebody watched Rudy and was like, oh, I got a better story for you than that. But it's definitely not the guy.
It doesn't seem like they thought, oh, I have a better story. They're just like, oh, I have another story that's also about football and inspiring. But it's such a non-story.
Such a non-story.
Yeah. And then the other movie, which you didn't see. You didn't bother.
I didn't see. This was the one that there was two opportunities to see it.
And you skipped them both.
Well, I skipped one for Mile American.
Right.
And then I skipped the other for me.
Laziness.
I guess.
Love the Cooper.
I would have had to get a babysitter. I'm on my own. I'm a single parent for the next few days.
Yeah, that's cute. Love the Coopers. is a Christmas movie, and it's not based on a true story.
What? That's a theme. Sorry. What are you doing?
I don't make the rules here.
Oh.
Not based on a true story. Not really based on the actual interactions of real human beings at all, really. But it's about Diane Keaton. Diane Keaton, for the last 20 years, has been in the role of her career where she plays affluent women with great kitchens.
And are a little insane.
Well, yeah. Well, that's just Diane Keaton.
Yes.
Always Diane Keaton been walking the line between national treasure and public nuisance. And she and John Goodman, husband and wife, they're the Coopers. And it's Christmas Eve, and all the family will be gathering together. But we start in the morning. We have a narrator. It's the voice of Steve Martin narrating for us. Yeah. And he's telling us, and here's Charlotte and Sam, and we introduce us to all the people. We figure out how they're all related, and then building up to that evening when they're together for Christmas Eve dinner. The gist of it is that Diane Keaton and John Goodman are splitting up after 40 years of marriage. They haven't told anybody yet. Yeah, it's sad.
How does Anthony Mackie take it?
Everybody's in this movie. I'm looking at the cast right now.
This is
insane. I know. But so they're splitting up. They haven't told anybody yet. Diane Keaton's sister is Marissa Tomei. Yeah, that's what I said. They're 18 years apart, if you're wondering.
Do they talk about that?
No. Okay. They say that... I mean, we know that the Diane Keaton character is older, but we see them in flashback as little girls, and they're like 6 years apart.
Oh, okay, okay.
But yeah, Marissa Tomei, they're 18 years and several ethnicities apart, Diane Keaton and Marissa Tomei.
That's right.
And their father is Alan Arkin, who is 13 years older than Diane Keaton.
Nice.
And then John Goodman's aunt is in there. That's that June Squibb.
June Squibb.
And then they're... Goodman and Keaton's kids are Ed Helms, and he's recently divorced, and he lost his job, and he's hiding that fact from his ex-wife and his kids.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. It gets better. Here, wait for it. Wait for it. Ed Helms' sister is Olivia Wilde, Eleanor. She's coming in from out of town, and at the airport, she meets Jake Lacey, a soldier. Jake Lacey was the guy in Obvious Child.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I like him. I've seen him in something else, too. He did some TV that I liked,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, he's good. Yeah. He's a soldier, and Olivia Wilde meets him at the airport and convinces him to come with her to Christmas Eve dinner to pretend to be her boyfriend so her parents won't be disappointed. So it's like a buffet of the terrible... holiday movie cliche plots.
But because all of those people are in it, including Amanda Seyfried, who you haven't even mentioned.
She is a waitress at a diner where Alan Arkin goes for breakfast every morning.
Oh, boy.
And they're pals. And she suddenly, on Christmas Eve, announces she's leaving town. This is all in Pittsburgh. She's going to move to a tiny town in Mississippi and start over, which doesn't make any sense. And
does Alan Arkin leave when he dies? I'm assuming he dies in this movie. When he dies, does he leave her the fortune instead of anybody else in the family?
There's no fortune. Oh. And he doesn't die. It's not that kind of movie.
But based on this cast, it's still – I'm sorry. It's a 9 or a 10.
No, nope.
Based on this cast, I think it just has to be. They'll rise above all of this material.
I didn't even get to Anthony Mackie because Marissa Tomei, she gets caught shoplifting. She's shoplifting a gift for her sister Diane Keaton. For reasons that are not really explained, gets caught, spends most of the movie in the back seat of Anthony Mackie's police car, being driven from the mall to the police station, which evidently takes like 6 hours. And while she's in the back seat, she gets the police officer, Anthony Mackie, to open up about his own problems with relationships. He's secretly gay and is having trouble accepting that. That's the worst part. Everything with Marissa Tomei and Anthony Mackie, that's the worst. Those are not real people. Those are not real characters doing real things. Cut that out and throw it in the trash. Olivia Wilde and Jake Lacey, as contrived as their situation is, and he's also conservative, and she keeps harping on him about that, like in a way that he's like, give it a rest, lady.
Yeah.
But they are cute together, and they have chemistry. Everyone loves John Goodman, but he's kind of a sad sack in this.
Yeah.
And it's people, it's contrived situations and people not really acting the way that people act. And
I got a question for you.
Hmm.
Is Ed Helms is currently, okay. We still like Ed Helms, but he doesn't know how to be good in movies anymore. Is that what's going on with Ed Helms?
Well, I don't. When did he know how to be good in movies? I feel like in general, movies have not really found. I guess the first Hangover. He's had his moments here.
The first Hangover and the Jason Segel film, about me. What was it called?
Oh, Jeff Who Lives at Home.
Yes,
that's right.
He was good in that. He was good in that.
Although he wasn't the lead in that.
Agreed.
Well, he's not the lead. He,
but anyway,
generally not. Movies are not finding his talents. It's yeah. And this is a spoiler. It's not a spoiler because it's too stupid to be a spoiler. All along, we keep hearing this narrator, the voice of Steve Martin,
mm-hmm.
and the narrator refers to the fact or implies that he knows these people. He says something about the John Goodman character, like I know him pretty well or something. Turns out it's the dog. The dog has been narrating the whole movie. The family dog. Yeah.
No.
And there you go. It's a C.
It's a C after all of that? How can that be a C?
I mean, it's harmless enough. It's not aggressively annoying. It's just kind of dumb and pointless. And occasionally mildly funny, but very occasionally and mostly not. So there you go. It's a lousy week for the wide releases. Spotlight is going wider this week, but not super wide. But anyway.
I wonder, movies should start saying that. Instead of a wide release, they should start going super wide. That's what they should start saying.
Super wide.
That should be a thing. Opening super wide. Super wide. Careful with that. All right.
We asked you guys to give us some question of the week suggestions.
And they did.
And you did. And we've chosen one for our question of the week for now. And this was suggested by Chrissy. Chrissy Madonna. I wonder if that's really her middle name. I wonder if this is the real Madonna. Chrissy Madonna suggests as question of the week, what's your favorite people around the table of food scene? Oh, the mail's here.
Doesn't have to be a holiday movie.
Right.
But Thanksgiving is almost here.
Sort of relates.
Maybe it's a Thanksgiving or a holiday or Christmas.
I'd say it doesn't even necessarily have to be a table of food.
Ooh.
But people sitting around eating.
Sitting around and eating. What's your favorite sitting around and eating scene?
And you can email us, moviebspdx@gmail.com.
It'll also be up on our Facebook page. You can find that at moviebs.com. And thank you, everybody, for your suggestions. You can always suggest a question of the week to us through email or on Facebook if you would like. Also, Dustin had a lovely idea, which is submit your questions for Jeff and Eric to answer. It's a reverse question of the week. I want this to be a thing that we always do.
Yeah.
So we're going to occasionally pop this up on Facebook and see if you guys do have any questions. I think we should call the segment, well, we'll need music eventually, but something about like Jeff and or Eric answer your questions. Jeff and or Eric answer your questions. And anyway, whatever question you have for us, if you want to email it to us because you feel like, oh, I don't want people to see it until they talk about it on the show, feel free to email us that question. Otherwise, again, you can just like direct it to us on Facebook as well. We will see it. And if we want to, we'll answer it.
Yeah, if we want to.
And right now we want to.
Not having seen the questions. Yeah, we totally want to.
Yeah, the idea of this is fantastic.
The idea of what is appealing is the idea of talking about ourselves. I think
and
is
this
what
way,
it comes down to.
You guys can get to know us just a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Not more than the who is it? Who is it that just re-listened to every single one of our episodes?
Yeah, one of our listeners emailed us and
he did it.
At us.
I think he did it in one day too, which is just that's insane.
I don't know.
He must have listened to them on top of each other.
I don't know
how it works. But anyway,
yeah,
somebody just did that. Whew. That's a lot of Jeff and Eric.
It's too much, Jeff and Eric. That
Thank
should be
you.
The if we if this guy suggested we should do a daily show every day. That would be the name of the daily show. Too much of Jeff and Eric.
That too much of Jeff and Eric could be the us answering questions about ourselves that might not even necessarily be movie related.
That's a good name for that segment. Yeah.
Too much of Jeff and Eric.
Too much.
Too much.
Give it a rest, guys.
Ooh, give it a rest, guys, would be good too. There's too many options here.
All right, well, that wraps up the show. Let's recap what happened. Spotlight is really good.
Oh, it's nice.
You guys should see that.
You should. You guys.
All of you. And you girls. You ladies and gentlemen. Everybody.
I think so. Yep.
And then the 33? No.
Meh.
Meh. Meh. And that other one? My All-American?
Ugh. No. No.
And then,
I really like sports movies.
I know you do.
I'm forgiving of sports movies. Mm-hmm. This was terrible.
And then Love the Coopers is no. Mm-mm.
There we go. And the question of the week, we asked you that earlier. So if you've forgotten what it is, go to our Facebook page and you'll see it. Or rewind and listen to it there.
People sitting around eating. Favorite people sitting around eating scene.
Or Eric will just tell it to you one more time. And look on Facebook for the, hey guys, here's a question. That segment that'll come to a Facebook page near you. And there we go.
You're very excited about the people of the idea of people asking us questions.
I just, I like occasionally taking pause from movies and talking into a microphone about something else.
Yeah. That'll be fun. All right, so till next week, for Movie BS with Bear and Snyder, I'm Eric D. Snyder.
Wait, who? Who are you again?
I'm Eric D. Snyder.
I'm Jeff Bear.
Thanks for listening, and good day.
I said good day.